Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Hey, hey, you hear that? That's the bond market. It's talking to us. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, the 22nd day of February, and we begin today with a very brief, I promise you, very brief tutorial. When we talk about interest rates, specifically the Federal Reserve and what it is doing, we're talking about one very specific rate. It's called the federal funds rate, and it's the Fed's guideline for what banks ought to charge each other to borrow money overnight, the shortest of short-term rates. Rates on other debt are set by the market, and that includes government debt, of which, as you know, there is a lot. So when we give you the yield, the interest rate, on the 10-year Treasury at the end of the numbers every day, that's what the bond market believes the 10-year ought to be paying over its maturity. All of which I mention because lately the market has been pushing that yield on the 10-year higher, up dancing around 4%, which we haven't seen since last November. And as often happens with the bond market, it is trying to tell us something. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore translates.
Treasury bill, T-note, T-bond, it's all just you loaning money to the government and the government paying you interest. You can lend the government money for 10 years. That's the 10-year, which we're always going on about. But you could also do it just a month.
1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years.
Stephen Lipley is with BlackRock. Now, you could just buy a 1 month Treasury note every single month. Let it expire, get the interest. The next month, maybe there's a new interest rate. You buy a new one, let it expire, get the interest, buy a new one. You could do that every month. Or you could just buy one that lasts a whole year, or 2 years, or 10.
And you should end up with the same yield if the market is accurately pricing.
For this to all work, the 10-year Treasury yield has to guess what the 1 month yield will be for the next 10 years. Same for the 5 year, same for the two. Which means the bond market has to predict the future.
Number one, what is going to happen with interest rates?
Luis Alvarado is a global investment strategist with the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. Is the Fed going to raise interest rates? When will it stop? When will it lower them? The longer the Treasury bond, the more it has to predict.
Also, what's going to happen with the economic cycle? What do we expect the economy is going to be looking like?
And a big one, bond yields also have to predict inflation because it eats away at investment.
Those are the components that are literally being combined right now in market expectations.
Early this year, yields started to go down because the market thought inflation was going to be solved quickly. Then we got a hot jobs report and a strong retail sales report and a not great inflation report. The future looked more dim, so yields started coming back up. Matthew Luzzetti is chief U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank.
What we've seen over recent weeks is some adjustment to evidence that perhaps inflation is not on a pure downtrend, that there are likely going to be bumps in the road.
All of this to say, every Treasury bill, every T-note, every 10-year bond is really an economic crystal ball, if you know how to look at it. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Equities on this Wednesday, stocks, that is, not a whole lot of anything. Actually, details, numbers, y'all know the drill. We're going to do a story about cause and effect now, and what happens when that cause goes away. SNAP benefits, once upon a time called food stamps, were increased during the pandemic, and that helped keep tens of millions of people fed. That extra monthly payment, though, goes away next month. But What happened while the program was in effect was that more stores started accepting SNAP as payment for online grocery orders. Wegmans, in fact, just became the latest supermarket chain to do that. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab takes it from there.
For some people, online grocery shopping for curbside pickup or delivery is a convenience. But Ellen Vollinger, SNAP director at the Food Research and Action Center, says for others, it's a necessity.
Housebound seniors, people who might be immunocompromised and may come with different mobility challenges and needs. They may live in places that are far distant from the grocery store.
Those populations are also more likely to be affected by food insecurity. For instance, 1 in 5 SNAP households include someone with a disability. But until recently, most grocery stores weren't accepting SNAP online.
All of that got accelerated early in 2020 when social distancing became a reality in the United States.
Now, many major retailers, including Walmart and Amazon, accept SNAP online. Part of the delay was because stores lacked the technical infrastructure. Bobby Gibbs is a food retail consultant at Oliver Wyman.
The real key for retailers to be able to accept SNAP payments is through signing on with the right payment processor who's able to accept and validate the SNAP PIN.
That's the numerical code recipients use to access their funds. And this took partnerships between local governments and companies. Food industry analyst Phil Lempert says expanding access to online ordering is the right move for both ethical and business reasons.
Because, you know, this is a very loyal customer.
He says SNAP spending makes up between 20 and 30% of an average grocery store's sales. And a good website that caters to SNAP recipients can keep them coming back.
Online tools really can hone in on the nutritional value of foods, what's on sale.
And also, what foods are SNAP eligible? I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
I think I might have mentioned this the other day, that the National Retail Federation was thinking consumers would spend almost $26 billion on Valentine's Day this year. The top three items in order were candy, greeting cards, and flowers. Christina Stemble is way down in the weeds of that last industry.
I was in a warehouse at Valentine's Day making hundreds of bouquets myself, so yeah.
Christina is the CEO and the founder of a direct-to-consumer company called Farm Girl Flowers, and I have talked to her. Well, I think it's a time or five, really. Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. It's good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It has. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, you bet. Well, you know, it's post-Valentine's Day. We gave you a little time to, you know, count things up. And I guess the first question has to be, how was Valentine's Day for you?
It was as expected. So that's
always a good thing. Boy, that sounded very bland. That sounded very bland, if I may just say.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't what we wanted it to be, but it's what we expected it to be. So I still take that as a win. I feel like I'm always here telling you the challenges. So I like to have at least some positive to sandwich it a little bit.
Well, that's fair. But look, one of the reasons I like talking to you so much is because you, generally speaking, give it to me unvarnished. And that is, it's always refreshing. Let me ask you the challenges since last we spoke, which I guess was probably around last Valentine's Day.
Yes, it was. I think it was like almost to the week, I think.
Oh, wow.
We still have some of the same challenges. Everybody's talking about inflation, and we're definitely not immune to that either. You know, greenhouse grown flowers, it costs a lot of energy
To heat the greenhouses. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of them actually turned them off in December because they couldn't afford to heat them, which caused a lot of the Valentine's Day flowers not to be ready on time.
Wow.
So the limited supply drove the prices back up.
We've talked a couple of times, I think, about distribution and how you manage that. Are you changing how you're doing things?
Always. Every time I talk to you.
It does seem that way.
Yeah. Yeah. We're either setting up distribution centers or tearing them down. This year is a building year for that. We need to get closer to the end consumer. And we've known that for years, but we've tried it several ways that haven't worked. And so, you know, that's the joys of being a bootstrap founder. You just keep trying things until something works. We're looking at a new model, maybe some micro distribution centers that we own, and then some that are through partnerships to see if we can do some SKU replication and things like that.
I should know this, but I don't. How long have you been in business?
12 and a half years.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That's the first two were from my dining room table. So, but they still count.
So look, do you still think you're a startup at 12 and a half years in with, I know it's like in the millions of dollars of sales, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, tens of millions now, which is great.
Yeah.
But it, kind of our mantra this year is return to startup. You know, we know how to spend less than we make. And mm-hmm. a lot of companies don't know how to do that. And that comes from being, you know, a scrappy startup.
All right. A couple of questions about sort of the business environment right now. Number one, working from home, has that changed your dynamic at all? Because it's not like people are thinking about, you know, sending flowers to somebody at their office so they can be seen, right? So
yes, it has. There's not a lot of studies that show this, but my gut, and after 12 and a half years, it's pretty spot on.
I'll go with your gut on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely has, especially around Valentine's Day, like holidays. You know, this sounds a little bit bad to say, but part of the sparkle and the specialness of sending a bouquet to someone is, you know, all their colleagues get to see it mm-hmm. at Valentine's mm-hmm. Day. And without that, it's very easy to just stop at the grocery store, spend a fraction of the price. I question whether Valentine's Day will ever come back the way it was before until everybody's back in the office again.
Okay, well, so first of all, everybody getting back in the office is not a sure thing, as we're all experiencing. But if that's the case, and Valentine's Day is some huge percentage of your annual revenue, how is this sustainable?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it puts a lot more pressure on Mother's Day. And so my team is definitely feeling it. Mother's Day has always been our biggest holiday.
Like there's not enough pressure on Mother's Day already, let me just say.
Yeah, it has to like cover at least 10 to 15% more of our annual revenue has to come from Mother's Day now to make up for Valentine's Day.
That's a lot.
It is.
How are you going to do that?
We're going to work some magic, hopefully. We've definitely made the conscious decision. You know, every company is making big choices right now. And the choice that, you know, I made last year, we're continuing to really focus on profit and not growth. You know, we need more to come from Mother's Day, but it might not necessarily be as many more orders, but we're really making sure that each order has profit
as well. Right. Take me back to that dining room table 12 and a half years ago. What would the you of back then say to the you of right now?
Oh my gosh, she wouldn't even recognize me. And I wouldn't recognize her. You know, I've just learned so much and I never thought that I would be here doing business the way that we do business, but I'm grateful for all the learning with it.
The company is Farm Girl Flowers, 12 and a half years ago, started at the dining room table of Christina Stemble, the CEO. Thanks. It's really good to talk to you.
Thanks, Kai.
Coming up.
This $2 million canning line is a jump without a net.
$2 million to put a non-alcoholic cocktail in a can. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 84 points today, about a quarter percent, 33,045. The NASDAQ up 14 points, about a tenth percent, 11,507. The S&P 500 gave back 6 points, a bit under two-tenths percent, 39.91 there. This was a good day on Wall Street for consumer discretionary companies. Among them, the restaurant chain Wingstop beat estimates. Sales were up nearly 46% year on year. That's a lot of wings. Shares heated up by just under 7.7%. Timeshare operator Travel and Leisure Company also beat estimates. It upgraded just shy of 1.1%. Falling temperatures across a decent-sized chunk of the country, including Southern California. Hello, there are blizzard warnings in the mountains. Anyway, natural gas companies had a great day today. Am I complaining? Maybe a little bit. Cheniere Energy, ticker symbol LNG, heated up 2.75%. Chesapeake Energy lit up 2.1%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Teachers, as you've heard here and elsewhere, have been leaving their jobs in unusually high numbers since the pandemic. Also of note, more of those teachers' bosses have started leaving too. 16% of public school principals retired or resigned in the 2021-22 school year. That's more than double the rate of the year before, and it's according to new research from RAND. As Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, it is not easy being a boss right now, especially at schools.
Beth Lear didn't want to be that person.
That person who everybody's worked with where you're like, oof, you should have retired a few years ago.
Lear's leaving her role as the assistant principal of Sawahita High School in southern Arizona. She says she is still good at her job. She's not that person yet. But the past few years have been tiring because her students have needed a lot more emotional support.
While it is something that I very much enjoy doing, what that means is that there's very little left for my children when I get home.
Lear's kids are 10 and 12, and she often doesn't get home until after a 12-hour day. That new research from RAND found lots of principals are leaving. Heather Schwartz, one of the authors of the report, and says principals play a lot of different roles.
They're sort of the everything. They're the CEOs of the building, in a sense. They're in charge of hiring, retaining, and guiding their teachers. They're often financial leaders.
Schwartz points out principals have also been in the thick of polarizing debates over things like masking and identity politics. And she says there's not enough research about school leaders and whether increased pay or more support would help them stay, even though they're critical to the functioning of a school.
When they leave, oftentimes the direction of the school can change. And so they can kind of create a whipsaw of reforms.
In Shelby, a town in northern Ohio, John Geis has been principal of the high school for 16 years and says he spends more time than he'd like on non-academic matters. One thing that's kept him going is sitting in on a class when he has a moment.
You'd be amazed how after a half hour of just sitting in a few classrooms that it just kind of gets your mind set back.
But Geis is worried that not enough people want to go into teaching, which means there will be even fewer teachers who want to become principals. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Sometimes when you're out in the field doing an interview, you got to do a little spur of the moment training with the people you're talking to.
So, number one, here's how you hold the microphone for a radio interview. Nice up here like this. Oh. Don't do that. Just do this. Speak right over it.
Okay.
We were going to do karaoke.
Yeah, well, I hear you. So, first thing I want you to do is tell me who you are and where we are. You go first.
Okay. I'm Litty Matthew. I'm one of the co-founders and spirits makers at Green Bar Distillery. And we're in the middle of the production floor at Green Bar Distillery in the Arts District.
I'm Malkin Kazrovi, and I'm the other half of the team that makes spirits at Green Bar.
That noise you hear in the background, by the way, is a multi-million dollar canning machine, which we will get to in a minute. Green Bar is one of the oldest distilleries in Los Angeles. It's been around for almost 20 years. They're in an old brick warehouse close to downtown, 13 employees, co-founders included.
You're a spirit maker. What does that mean?
Well, it means that we make liquor for a living.
Okay, so how's business?
Business has been really interesting, and 2022 was really good.
But it took a lot of pivoting. Right before COVID, 80% of our customers were restaurants and bars,
yeah,
all of which shut down, and we had to figure out how to make a living doing something related to stores.
Right.
And that's where our ready-to-drink cocktails came in handy.
And that's what's going on over there, right? You're canning up ready-to-drink cocktails, but those are non-alcoholic, right?
These are non-alcs, yeah.
Non-alcs, is that what they're called?
That's the lingo.
Or NAs.
NA?
Yeah.
Feels like you're filling out a form. NA, not applicable.
What took us by surprise in many ways, when we look at last year's sales, almost two-thirds of what we sold were non-alcoholic drinks.
Okay, so let me tell you why we're here. We're here because I just came off Dry January.
Oh.
Didn't really love it, but that's a whole different interview series. But it got us to thinking about the non-alcoholic market. And then we did some research and found you and found the statistics that 2/3 of your sales last year were non-alcoholic. Did that just baffle you? I mean, when you saw that happening, what did you think?
I don't know if it was bafflement. I think we've seen this coming, and Melcon and I talk about it all the time.
Like for me, I drink 12 to 15 cocktails a week.
Wait, really?
Okay, all right, okay.
Only two or maybe three of them are alcoholic.
Because we were going to get some letters about that, let me tell you.
I would be in big trouble.
Yeah, no joke.
If all of those were boozy.
Right.
But
right.
Because most of them aren't, no big deal. The consequences are not as big.
Here's the thing, though, and part of the reason we're curious about you guys and your business, when you think non-alcoholic, mostly now, although it's changing a little bit, you think beer, right? Beer was the original non-alcoholic beverage.
Beer was and still is the biggest non-alcoholic beverage out there. Cocktails are catching up quickly, especially as we move from bottled non-alcoholic gins and whiskeys and, you know, rums to things that feel like beer, where you just pop a can and drink it.
Which is what we're looking at,
which is what we're looking
literally,
at.
So this is the business move you guys made.
Yeah.
You said we need to be able to have that single serving, just grab it from the fridge and do it, right?
Let's see, go ahead. There's a moment you have to jump without a net. And this canning line that you see, it's a $2 million canning line, is a jump without a net.
Oh.
And I think we made the right move.
So let me ask you, actually, let me get really wonky here for a minute. You made a $2 million investment. I'm guessing you didn't have the cash sitting around, so you had to take out a loan. So you're probably really interest rate sensitive right now.
We are. And it was a hilarious conversation to have with our bank.
Yeah, not really ha-ha hilarious.
No. It was like, hey, our business is down. The economy is going into a bad place.
Yeah.
Could you lend us a bunch of money to take a leap into this new category that we have barely begun to, scratch the surface of?
Yeah.
And they said, well, we see the potential, so here's $2 million. But over the last year, our interest rates have made the payments, like 50% more.
Well, so that just means we have to sell a lot more product.
Well, okay, but can you grow? Do you have capacity? Can you sell? Can you make enough product to sell it and still be profitable?
Profitable.
That's why we got the canning line. We were doing it with a mobile canning company, but that left no money for us.
So I'm sorry, a mobile canning company, like they pull up out front? And
yeah. They pull into the building and you use it just for that run, basically,
right.
And then they go out.
Forecast this for me now, though. You've made this investment.
Mm-hmm.
2/3 of your business is non-alcoholic beverages.
Yeah.
What's the next, 18 months for you look like?
I think we double our non-alcoholic sales.
Really?
Yeah.
Because the demand is crazy. This is now edging into the world of, soda pop?
Yeah, a little bit.
Something like that. So this doubles, and then we're going more and more into the ready-to-drink world with alcoholic options as well.
It occurs to me that as you've transitioned now from on-premise to, I guess, you're selling to people in their homes, you have to find all new outlets for yourself. You have to get into Whole Foods. You have to get into supermarkets, right? Must have been a huge chunk of your time figuring that out.
It was a night and day difference in our business model because we didn't work with supermarkets. We didn't work with a lot of stores. Restaurants were our lifeline, and now it's the opposite.
A 4-pack of one of Green Bar's non-alcs is about $15. We, American consumers, that is, spent nearly $400 million on non-alcoholic drinks last year. That's from Nielsen IQ. And spirits is the fastest growing part of that. Those sales were up almost 90% year over year.
What we're canning right now, what you're hearing
is
that noise?
This?
This is our most popular non-alcoholic canned cocktail. It's a non-alcoholic gin and tonic. But guess how we make it? We make a gin, and then we boil off the alcohol and make a tonic and can it. It's
you
gin.
You actually make the gin.
Yeah,
you
actually make there. The gin. And that's still over there.
That's a good-looking still. That's a well-used still.
Yeah.
Classic, right? It's got the copper and the whole meal.
Yeah, exactly. So because we start with alcohol and de-alcoholize it, it just has a different weight to it.
Yeah.
And it tastes great. Maybe you can try some.
Well, except it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Yes, I know it's non-alcoholic, but it just doesn't, you know.
I know, right? Tradition.
Breakfast gin and tonic.
That's another whole different podcast. All right. So look, so this is not a business-minded question. It's a sentimentality question. Does it make you sad having spent, what is it now, 18 years building this company on spirits? Does it make you sad now that you're transitioning?
Oh, for Litty, running Green Bar Distillery, it's always been so much fun. What's so interesting about the non-alcoholics is that it's the same customer who buys our alcoholic items. Huh. So there's just more stuff that we're providing this person. And those customers are, you know, people like ourselves. So we, too, are drinking non-alcoholics.
Yeah. There's also the practical aspect of this, Kai. You can have something complex. You can have something interesting, but it's affordable. And in this case, it's non-alcoholic. So that occasion can be any time of the week. It's just how much fun do you want to have?
I want to have all the fun. Thanks, you, Joe. I appreciate it.
All right. You guys want to go back upstairs?
Yeah, no, we're good. I mean, we're done. We're gonna put that in the can. Put that in the can and call it a day. This final note on the way out today, in which we read the minutes of the last Federal Open Market Committee meeting so you don't have to. You're welcome, by the way. Honestly, though, no surprises coming. Here is the money quote. Participants generally noted that upside risks to the inflation outlook remained a key factor shaping the policy outlook. Translation, if I could steal a page from Sabri Benishore today, higher rates for longer, people, higher rates for longer. Here is your moment of economic context as we leave you for the day. It comes to us via the American Hotel and Lodging Association, which is, to be clear, the lobbying arm of big hospitality. That's capital B, capital H. But that in mind, their data is kind of interesting. The group says average U.S. hotel occupancy should hit 63.8% this year. That is just a touch below the last number they had from the before times, 2019, 65.9% average occupancy. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostedt, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.